Well, hello there. Welcome back to Sounds of a Frenchman with CZ Young, myself. I'm very, very, very happy to be here with you in your life, guys, today. I love you all, even if you listen just that little 10 seconds of introduction. That's it. You made my day. So that's what I wanted to bring today. I love you all, and it's in the spirit of love that I bring everything. Love to everybody. You know, early in the 20th century, there was that group of people calling themselves the Theosophian, you know, the Theosophy. It's a movement, it's a current created by Elena Blavatsky, among others. We're going to come back to that. And that current gave birth to a lot of theories about who we are. There was a research at that time, a very profound research, in certain sphere of our society, of people that will really try to answer that question. Who are we? Who are we from? And you know, when you get driven by your common objective like that, sometimes it's almost all right. When I go down the hole, when I go down the rabbit hole, am I going too deep? Sometimes you take a corner that even the rabbit, he say, that was just the hole was there, but you know. And very often that corner is our own imagination. Let me explain myself. Along my research, so I call it a research, it's a term that I coined, but I don't like to use it. I just wander out there on the net, you know, but I'm trying to find solid source. What do we call solid source is the official narrative. So what you try to find to do is try to find all the source. Who is that guy that this guy took the story from? You know, I'm writing about James Churchward. Well, where did James Churchward take his information? If the information stops at James Churchward, there's chances that it's only coming from him. You know where I'm getting there? So be careful. I'm not saying be careful of the liars out there, but be careful of you. Try to track your source as far as possible, because in this world that we live in, I'm telling you guys, we are lied to on a daily basis by a lot of people that are not supposed to lie to us. Again, we come back to what's the main source is the mainstream science, mainstream historians, mainstream media, mainstream. We got to get out of that. In order to do it, in order to get out of that, in order to process the right sources, we got to know where to look for. There's a story that drives me since I'm a kid. It's the story of Atlantis. You know, I've always been very interested in the story of Atlantis. I don't know why. I don't even know where it started. But eventually, you get to Plato, right? So this is kind of the same thing. At the end, we only have Plato. Plato, it's hard to put him on the side of, like, your typical liar. Plato is, wow, something. If he existed, but the concept of Plato is something. And very quick, when you look for Atlantis and things of that essence and lost civilization, you end up on Mu and Lemuria. And so that meant that I cited before, James Churchward, seems to be the only source of information about Mu, the motherland of man. So I have a fantastic guest today. And this guest is no other than the great-grandson of James Churchward. So we're going to hear what he got to say, because he did the research, Right, he went deep in order to find out what was his great-grandfather was about. Great-grandfather, oh my God. I gotta get my diction together. I'm sorry about that, folks. Well, you know the deal. Lay back, pour yourself a glass of your favorite beverage. I don't know, I feel it's gonna be a beer summer. I'm at a beer, cold brew, I love it. All right, guys, enjoy. Well, hello, guys. Welcome back for another episode of Sounds of a Frenchman with Cesar Young, myself. Today, I got a fantastic episode coming. I've been waiting for that for a little bit, a fantastic guest, but I don't want to chew it up for you, so I think this is best if he introduces himself on who he is and why I got him on the show tonight. So it's Mr. Jack Churchward. Thank you very much for being here, sir.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
All right. So Jack, please go ahead, introduce yourself.
I'm Jack Churchward. I'm an electrical engineer. I served 6 years in the United States Navy, and I've been working ever since as in our military avionics, as an electrical design engineer. And in my spare time, I get the opportunity to research the theories of my great grandfather.
All right. So you wrote books about that. That's
correct. Well, I originally, when I got the email address of jack@churchward.com, I started to get all these emails asking me what I thought of my great grandfather's theories. And when I was young, people had already asked me as well. And when I went home to talk to my father about it, he said, "Oh, it's all just a bunch of baloney. It's not worth your time." And he never had any books, and he had stayed with my great grandmother, so he actually knew my great grandmother and knew quite a bit about the surroundings of what had happened back then. And essentially, when I got I finally got to the point where I had a little bit of extra time on my hands, and I wanted to review it myself, research the information of my great-grandfather myself, so that I wouldn't just spit out, "Oh, it's just a bunch of hooey. It's just a bunch of baloney," and just tell them that, rather than actually tell them or provide evidence to make my opinion.
Is that your engineering background talking?
James was an engineer. James was an engineer. And I'm a fourth generation engineer, actually.
Yeah, you own some patents, right?
Only one. All right. On transient voltage protection.
That's fantastic, man. That's an achievement.
It's on my bucket list.
All right. That's
one thing checked off.
All right, I take that. I like that. I'm all about that. I got a big bucket list. Trust me. That's also why I'm doing that. That's on my bucket list. So how did you approach the subject? Because this is a huge subject. I mean, we got to talk a little bit about who was James and his expertise in quotes.
James started writing his books in the late 1920s. He said that when he was in India, in 1870s, that he had was a Bengal lancer,
a soldier in the British Army, basically.
That's what he said. There is evidence to the contrary, but during his travels, supposedly,
I love that you write about. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I love that little anecdote in your book about the. Oh, was it in the book or somewhere else? I read that your great grandmother wrote a letter confirming that. Ryan, can you tell me about that? I love that.
One of the letters that my half sister provided to me was a letter to one of James' brothers, and the fact that she had listened to him on the WNYC back then, because he was also on the radio. And she was saying that she listened to a story that she and him had listened to on their way back from Sri Lanka one time. So they knew for sure, she knew for sure that A, he was not in the military of any kind there.
She wouldn't know.
He was a tea planter. And the fact that the stories he was telling was he were actually borrowed from other people. So.
All right. All right. That was exceptional. So the thing is this, the writing of your great grandfather gave lineage, I mean, like an inheritance, right? An inheritance to a lot of weird movements after that.
Well, his misinterpretations of things, yes. Well, let me continue. His theories were that he was in the Bengal Lancers, and he went to a temple, and he saw all these strange symbols all over the walls. So he eventually befriended the rishi that was at the temple, and he taught him how to transcribe and how to translate all them the symbols there. But before he left, before James left, he brought, after a while, they became real good friends, and the man brought out some old tablets, and these were supposed to be the Nakal tablets, and they were 12,000 years old, little clay tablets that were 12,000 years old, and only James saw them, and the rishi that nobody else ever saw. And so he brought this story out in the 1920s, after
so
50
years.
Years.
Yeah, all right.
After 50 years of not doing anything with it, there are no illustration. He provides no illustrations of what the actual Nakal tablets were. He just provides symbols that may have appeared on there, and his interpretations of other symbols that he's found through other cultures.
So all the symbols that are shown in the book that are from James' book are basically a creation of his own.
Well, his first book, he shows, I believe, four images from the Niven discoveries from the Valley of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
That was in the 1926 version. But in the 1931 version, after he became a correspondent with William Niven, he actually included 69 in his next book. That what they did is they didn't supplant completely his Nakal tablets, but he said that they were the same as the Nakal tablets, and that they were there to provide the another source of information about how the world began.
Did he travel a lot out of his plantation in India? From your research, did he travel to South America?
Actually, he was a tea planter in Sri Lanka.
Sri Lanka.
And same. I only have evidence that he went to India one time,
mm-hmm.
and that was to find out why the gentleman was foreclosing on his loan on his tea plantations.
So he was financially in troubles.
Yes, and they put him in jail.
Huh.
Well, actually, they didn't put him in jail because they only did that to Indian people. Back then, he was allowed to stay in the house of the local magistrate.
Different time.
And completely. And after a while, he dressed as a coolie, hopped on a boat, and took off.
Huh. And that's when he came to New York?
Well,
I mean, San Francisco first, right?
Probably, because he went through the Pacific Ocean. I don't believe he came around back to Europe.
Yeah.
Because his wife was really, really upset with him at that time because he had lost her inheritance.
Huh. Did James get interested in the subject before writing the books, or do you feel that it's like a pop-up opportunist type stuff that happened?
Well, I do have a copy of his unpublished biography by Percy Tate Griffith. Eventually it'll get out there. Someone else can read it. But in it, he mentions that he had spent, when Percy Tate Griffith was a young person, that James and Le Plongeon and Alice Le Plongeon and other theosophists would visit his and have Sunday afternoon parlor visits where they discuss everything about the new age and the new religion, and Le Plongeon was there, you know, but just back from his travels in Central America. So he very much salted the field for James before he wrote. If you take a close look at his first book, it's almost all Le Plongeon.
It's very interesting how Le Plongeon got that background behind him, where he did travel and document everything that he found in South America. But it's kind of amazing, all those guys. What's her name also, that Russian girl? What's her name? Well, they all have that background where, like, there's all those years that you cannot find out anything about them. Like, everything that they claim is from them.
I understand.
So for me, that's very interesting, because I take that approach, having a show on conspiracy theory, that makes me kind of dwell in any type of things, from the crazier to the crazier. So I have to take that approach that you kind of take, you know, where okay, you got to recoup your sources, you know, you got to find the right thing. To me, that was a great approach. So how did you organize yourself in that endeavor to find out what was James about?
Well, my first book, I took his 1926 Lost Continent of Mu, Motherland of Men. And it's called Lifting the Veil on the Lost Continent of Mu, Motherland of Men. And what I wanted to do was look at his references the books and the people. Who was he asking about? Now, he did quote some real experts. But then in the next sentence, he might have quoted them, but he said, they were all wrong. I know the truth because they didn't know about the Nicol tablets or whatever the thing it is.
So is the central aspect is really those Nicol tablets. It's all his basings are, or everything is based on that.
What I wanted to do was, like I said, I took the book and I condensed it, first of all, but it still has the same pagination. You can find the same pagination. I've included an index. And then there's appendices. The one is on all the books and all the written material that he quoted, so that I could compare it with what, if I could find it, with what he actually, what was actually written at the time. So you could see where the changes were, how he modified his words and his theories. And then about the people. I mean, if you want to get a theory from someone, you want to know, do they have the credibility to be able to enable the veracity of it? For instance, some of his people that he included in his books and he quoted were yellow journalists, and they wrote silly little stories to make money in the newspapers back when yellow journalism was a big thing. In fact, one of his scrapbooks, actually both of his scrapbooks have clippings from yellow journalism to prove that help and support his theories on the lost continent of Mu.
So did you go back up your family tree a little bit to try to find things about him? Maybe you know, the relatives in the family, his brothers and things like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I know my history back to the 15th century.
Because of that?
Well, no. Some other church wards have communicated with me, and we sat down, and I started a wiki a while back. Unfortunately, it got damaged, but yes, I know where our ancestral home is and all that stuff.
That's a fantastic thing. That's a fantastic thing. So through your research, you ended up, I'm sure, reading a lot about all those guys, all those Theosophian, I don't know how they call themselves really. How I can put that? What's your take on Atlantis and all those other type of civilization that are so called, you know, Atlantis, Lemuria?
Well, Atlantis is, according to James, was a colony of Mu. It hasn't been found yet. If maybe it was Santorini, but we only have, you know, Plato's words on it. So, plus a lot of things that people have made up over the years. And as far as that goes, some of it gets really wild. But when I run across some of these things, there's a few questions I want to ask. Like, so you see that somebody, for instance, people say that there was a Roman ship in South America, but that's great. So they say the Romans were in South America, but can you find anything else? Can you find out a place where they lived, and show where their culture actually existed? Well, and the
enough,
Chinese
enough to spread, actually, yeah.
enough to say that,
yeah, they were, you know,
they were there. I mean, you can at least find a plate or two,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Or some silverware, or yeah, or maybe some lost coins,
mm-hmm,
but they required an infrastructure to exist there.
Yeah.
It's just not, okay, I found a Roman coin, so the Romans must have been here. No, mm-hmm, probably fell out of somebody's pocket.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I see your approach. I like it. I like it. Now, there's one thing that comes very often in the people that are into James stuff, is the whole catastrophe, that whole wave, that whole flood event.
Mm-hmm.
And so through your research and all that, what did you came across? Did you came across anything?
Well, a lot of strange theories I've come across. For instance, one of James' theories was that the sun is not a hot body. It's a cool body.
Hmm.
Otherwise, when we get closer to it in the atmosphere, we wouldn't be cooler. It would be warmer the closer we got to it, is what he says.
All right. Yeah. No, this is wild. This is wild. So do you think that this was just out of, I don't know, seeking attention, getting fame out of the books, or things of that essence?
If you look at the time, and also included in the unpublished biography, is the fact that Percy Tate Griffith spoke with him and told him that, you know, all this is copied from Le Plongeon, and my great-grandfather told him that this was all, it's a fictional story. But after he wrote the first book with this supposedly fictional, he got a lot of people talking to him. He got places to, he could get a speaker's fee, he could sell his books. And if you look at the time period, right before, his first book came out before the Great Depression here in the United States.
Uh-huh.
And so,
yeah, 26, right? 1926.
I'm not, 26 when it came out, but
yeah,
but people were hurting.
Uh-huh.
There were food lines and things like that. Now, he had made a little bit of money. He also was a patented engineer. And he sued Bethlehem Steel Company for millions of dollars way back when.
For the for the
and,
the
and received it.
The warship steel, right?
Right, for the armor plating.
Yeah, armor plating.
Yes. And so he wasn't too bad off, but he spent his money, bought a big settlement up in Connecticut. And so I guess one way for him to make it through the Depression was to write books, go on a speaking tours, and just, you know, promoting this idea of a great lost continent of Mu. But it also helped people at the time, thinking it was helpful in that it provided them an opportunity to think that they could actually get away from being poor, having to stand in food lines and soup lines and bread lines, and there's something in the past that would enable them to have a brilliant future. Mm-hmm. The only problem that a lot of people have with his theory is that there wasn't some group of white people that left Mu and went around and engaged everybody else and gave them civilization. That's the first thing that people get from his theory.
So you talk a lot about that in the book, about the fact that is race oriented, whether it's the way he writes it and he's not completely conscious of it, or do you know what I mean?
Well, he's not conscious of it, no. But he approached it with the same mental attitude as an Englishman or a person born in 1851 would. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was just, that's their, I mean, today we call it ignorant, mm-hmm. but that's the way it was back then.
But you know what seemed very impressive to me is that it would seem that to write those books, I myself would try to write fiction things when I was younger, and it takes a lot of resources. Do you know what I mean? It takes a lot of mm-hmm. research. So we say he's ignorant. Reading his saying is very obvious of that, but there's still that amount of research that he's doing that is very intriguing to me. There's a lot of time.
As far as the theory, though, it's ridiculous mm-hmm. because originally he laid down that all the people on Earth started from Mu. And it was an egalitarian society. I don't know if he said it was egalitarian, but he said it was run by white people. But the white people left and went and colonized the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And now, if everybody came from Mu and they all had the same education and understanding, and then the Call Brotherhood that went along with them, who did they go out and bring civilization to? Mm-hmm.
So that's where the whole Uyghur Empire come, the great Uyghur Empire, the way he writes it. But reading your book is really giving us a complete other insight on it.
Well, I tried. When I was provided an opportunity, I was given an Uyghur language copy of The Lost Continent of Mu, and that one of the reasons I started in my research. Because the person who handed it to me said, there's some more information about Uyghurs in here that you don't know about. You might know the history, but here's the deep past history. And that's when I started thinking that it's really kind of silly, some of the things that he wrote in there. It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
I tried to look at that in my... In my book, Crossing the Sands of Time, I examine some of the myths and legends of the history and the legends of the Great Uyghur Empire, as he called it.
So probably got to put yourself back in the context, but how does James comes to to make what's he making about the Uyghur Empire, you know, like that those descendants of Mu, how does he come to that conclusion?
Well, a lot, like I said, a lot of it comes out of yellow journalism. Well, there's one article that parrots almost his entire theory, except that he makes changes along the way to so that it fits the lost continent of Mu.
So let me ask you that. I'm not going to ask you where you stand politically. First of all, I'm completely apolitical and all that. But when you look at what's going on today, the news, in the world and all that, do you think you have a different approach because you had that critical thinking on the work of James, or that doesn't really change nothing to you?
I don't think it changes very much at all.
Yeah. So you've been in that research for about 10 to 12 years now, right? Do you continue to look into certain things, certain of his writings?
Well,
do you still
I'm not spending as much time as I did before, but I do occasionally run across something that sparks my attention and makes me want to do another blog posting or another podcast. It's been a while, but
yeah. That's very interesting to me. Do you completely accept the history that we are all taught the way it is, or do you have a critical thinking on this too? In the sense, you know, not only the theories of James, but there's all other theories out there that are not as outlandish, you know, of lost civilizations and things.
The one thing that James was right about is that we're all humans. We're all part of the same family. Mm-hmm. And that was the one thing that he wrote that it was true, and it's still true today. That we're all humans, and we have to occupy this planet together.
Amen. Did you become a Buddhist along the time where you were researching that, or is it something?
No,
that
it
came
was before.
It was before. It was. Did he help you in the research?
No.
No, you didn't.
Well, let me not be so quick. There were some things that I was able to identify in his writings, like the Dorje, what he calls the imperial scepter of the queen of the Uyghur Empire. It's a Tibetan religious ritual object. Mm-hmm. It's actually Indian too. It's called Dorje.
So when you first read his book, the first time you read his book, or one of his book, did you add that right away? You were like, okay, this is a bunch of,
you know. I had listened to what my father said, so when I approached it during my research, I approached it with an open mind, and I don't get any money from the sale of his book, so I'm not limited in what I can say. I'm not pushing his agenda. Uh-huh. I'm writing what I discover from my research. Uh-huh. Without fear of or favor.
That's I think that's why I wanted you on the show. it's really great to have that point of view. I always talk, you know, when you talk with like-minded people, very often you get into a circle of where you don't really want to go, and you find other like-minded people that bring you out of that circle and show you that there's other theories out there that are a little more pragmatic, and that opens a lot of doors on other theories. You know, when you're into something and you start seeing how do you say it? Mu?
Yeah.
Mu or Lemuria or things of that essence, or Atlantis, don't be gullible. I hope my audience is not gullible. I don't think they are. I got clever people around. I love you guys. Jack, it's fantastic to have you. I had a great time. We've been half an hour in. I don't want to hold you too much, and I see there's a bad storm coming over my head. I feel the thunderstorm is gonna mess up that podcast. I don't want that. What's next on your agenda? Do you have plans? Talking about your books a little more, or writing another book maybe?
I'm thinking I've got some material to that I can put it together, and hopefully after I retire, I'll get busy and just start kicking them out.
All right. I can't wait. I can't wait. I'm gonna continue following your blog. Continue following you on Twitter. Please give me your handles. Tell the people where they can find you.
Well, my homepage is jack.churchward.com
And
or HTTP and all that.
I got you.
At J Church Ward for Twitter, I believe.
Yep.
Or maybe it's at JE Church Ward. I'm
Yeah, I got it here. At JE Churchward on Twitter.
okay.
So yeah, fantastic work. I can't wait to receive the other book. It should come tomorrow. Amazon messed me up. I was very, very upset at that. They sent me some other book that had nothing to do with it. Jack, thank you very much.
Well, if you have more questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
All right, guys. Well, I'm about to send you guys on a great evening or morning or wherever you are. If you're in your car, traveling to your job, or doing whatever you're doing, just enjoy life. Like Jack said, we all one on one planet, right? Is that a good
Yeah.
description of things? One on one planet, guys. I love you all. This was Sounds of a Frenchman with Caesar Young. Thank you for having me in your life, guys.